podcast, the Nanny Web Council. Hello everyone, I am your host Rillian, and what an exciting week it has been. We don't have enough time to cover all of the news, but we're going to go ahead and cover some, so let's begin. Again, we have our infamous Glumpuddle. Glumpuddle, welcome back.
Woo! What a week!
Hi.
Oh, yeah. And we have with us someone I've been wanting to get on the podcast for a while, our very own Jince. Jince, welcome to the council.
Hi, everybody. Thank you very much for having me along.
Jince is our first Brit I think we've had on the podcast, so I'm really excited because, again, Narnia Web is not just people from the U.S., and I like to have as many Aussies and Brits as we can on here since it's definitely what it's like on the forums. It's people all over the world, which is terrific. So we have had a very amazing week, and we won't even be able to cover it all on this one episode. But what we are going to cover is probably the source of the biggest, probably a great deal of the discussions that we've had, and that is the production blog part 6 featuring Ben Barnes. And I don't know about you two, but I haven't been this excited about the movie in really since I think it was first announced that it was going to be coming out.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic to see what Ben Barnes finally looks like as Caspian. I think it's great.
Glumpuddle, what were some of your thoughts? You kind of were uncontained at the opening of the podcast here.
Yeah, well, obviously it's extremely exciting to be getting the first footage, actual footage from the movie. I don't think we got any for the first movie. I don't think we got to see any actual footage from the movie until the trailer. And so it's pretty neat to get an early look. And, you know, there's some overall, my feelings are that there are some positives in this video and there's some negatives. I'm not flipping out over, I mean, obviously flipping out in the sense that it's exciting to see footage. But as far as my feelings about the film, I mean, I'm kind of half and half as far as there's some negatives and there are some positives in the video.
Yeah, well, for me, it was, I thought what we'd do here is talk about, first off, so some of our things we think of as far as what the world is going to look like and how it's shown in the blog. And lastly, we'll talk about some of the storyline hints that we're getting in the blog, okay?
Yeah.
Yep.
So what were some things that stood out to each of you about just how the world of Narnia is being portrayed in the second film? And Jince, ladies first.
Oh, thanks very much. Well, from what we see, I mean, there's a lot of indoor stuff going on. I mean, we can pick out Aslan's how fairly easily, but the other indoor things, we're not at all sure where they definitely are. There's one that looks like they're inside the castle, which looks quite spectacular. Are you thinking that all the indoor shots are in the castle? I'm interested to know what you guys think they are.
I think one of the indoor shots, where actually the only line of dialogue we have from Caspian, where he says, "I am Prince Caspian," is the. I think that's definitely where he meets Trumpkin and Truffle Hunter. That was my thought when I saw it. Glumpuddle?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I love that shot with his little Telmarine accent, "I am Prince Caspian." Because I love the, that's just how I imagine that scene. I mean, it's just one shot, but I love the firelight and then the look of that scene. In fact, the big positive in this blog that I'm just so excited about is the look and feel of the movie. I love the costumes. I love all the sets mm-hmm. that we've seen. Mm-hmm. And I like the fact that they tried to make it look a little bit darker. I mean, in early discussions about wardrobe, I was saying, oh, there should be a lot of color. And it probably was overall appropriate for that story, but I just really like, as far as the look, costumes and sets, what they're doing in the Prince Caspian. Very excited about it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I love the slightly darker tone, and I am frankly so excited about the costumes. And, I mean, for me, of course, I was at fencing class last night, and I said, oh, everyone, guess what? I just saw the kind of a featurette on the new Narnia movie. You guys have got to see it. And I was showing them as, oh, look at this costume change. Look at this you know, change here. And what I love is that, and this was an impression I got from the books, was that during the golden age of Narnia with Peter, Susan, Edmund, and Lucy, it's very much more of a medieval 1300s sort of era, where, and that affects how the blades and armor is looking. But now it's supposed to be a lot later, and since the book mentions that Reepicheep has a rapier, it's actually a much, all the costumes are actually a much later style, which I love. I mean, they're using Caspian instead of having chainmail armor through most of the shots we see. Like the scene where he's in the courtyard fighting, we see he's wearing a brigandine, which has metal plates inside, and that was something that came on later. And if you look closely at his sword, it has a swept hilt, which is the sort of hilt you see from The Princess Bride, which I just love, because actually, when I was reading the book, I imagined him to have a later period hilt, and I liked the idea that it's kind of these, it's even more of a separation between him and Peter's time. Because the book emphasizes, oh, you know, Peter was from so long ago. It would be like King Arthur coming back to modern-day Britain. Well, that's even more emphasized here because you have Caspian in his age, and here comes the High Kings and Queens, and they're using a slightly different kind of wardrobe look and a slightly different weapons look, which I just love, and I feel it gives a lot of authenticity to the story.
I completely agree. I like the fact that, you know, you have that Peter and Edmund, at least, are wearing the same armor, or at least looks the same, from the first film. And their armor is probably, I'm expecting it to be more colorful than the other costumes in the film. So they kind of stand out from the rest of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I love Caspian's costume.
Oh, fantastic armor. I love his armor.
Yeah. Well, what did you all think of the... I mean, the sets. We talked a little bit about the sets, but were you pretty pleased with what we saw of the indoors? And there was one shot that looked like they were at the stone table outside. It looked like the stone table from the first film.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Are you talking about that part where there's the fire?
No, I'm talking about, maybe it wasn't the stone table, it was kind of the, it was the archway that Aslan stands in. I think that they had that in the trailer. It's a shot with the four Pevensies and Caspian standing between them.
Oh, that, yeah.
Yeah, they're outside and they have some sort of ruins behind them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think that is? Who's whistling at me?
Well, I know exactly what it is, but that's a couple reports away.
Oh, man.
Oh. Sorry.
Yeah, I suppose we also can't talk about Aslan's how, even though we saw that in the production blog.
I think that'd be okay to talk about.
Oh, okay. Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I think I know pretty much what you know on that one.
Oh, that's true. Well, gents, what do you think of Aslan's how?
I think it looks fantastic. From this small, tiny little blip that we see in the production blog, I think that's going to be a really... hopefully a really dramatic scene when we get to see that in the movie.
I liked it, although when I saw the flames going across the altar or whatever it was, I immediately was thinking, Indiana Jones. I mean,
yeah.
That's just the kind of thing I was thinking of. This looks like something that Indy would be on.
Yeah, I've got kind of mixed feelings about that shot with the fire that pierced me inside of Santau, even though the carvings look really cool. But I hope that the entire how isn't that large, because I always imagined Aslan's how you kind of have to duck down, maybe just a little bit, and there's not that much space. You know, it's not the kind of place you want to be trapped in, which is what happens to them. And if they just want to have this one special room be this big area, that'd probably be very appropriate and very cool. But I hope the entire how isn't that huge.
Especially since in the book, they say, well, there's room to keep everyone there except the giant.
Right.
So it can't be too big.
Right, exactly.
I have to admit, when I saw it in the blog, I just immediately imagined that would be like a main big room, and they would then go through little corridors to antechambers sort of things.
I can't
picture it in my head as just being one big, huge room.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it looks pretty good, and I think that... I have no clue what's going on with the flames going across there, and it's not like that. I am nitpicking, I'll admit, but I do think
favorite.
The look they gave, I do like that they made it seem more alive than even than I imagined it. I usually prefer my imagination, but every once in a while, someone will come along with an idea that will be visualized a certain way through a painting or a movie or something, and I'll actually think, "Oh, I didn't imagine it that way." And I like that they made Aslan's Hound more like, I'll say, a tomb, if you know what I mean. Instead of, because I imagine it kind of like a series of caves, with the stone table being the one thing that actually was something interesting in there. And I like the idea that, oh, it's not just the stone table in here, this is kind of like a tomb of the memories of Narnia.
Yeah, with all the carvings, and everything that the book describes a little bit on the wall. I really like those. So,
yeah, exactly. So that's something I really liked seeing in the blog. I keep calling it a teaser, which is not true. We have
it is sort of a teaser though.
It teases us.
There's a couple controversial issues in the blog that have come up.
Yes. Well, let's go ahead and move on to them. Let's for those of you who have not been on the forums, if you see a post by Glumpuddle and you look down at his signature banner, it has a wonderful freeze on Ben Barnes screaming in battle with... go ahead and just tell us what it says, Glumpuddle.
It's Ben Barnes doing what I was kind of doing after I saw the video, which is screaming, "Why, Andrew? Why does Caspian have to fight Peeta?" At the top of his lungs, it would appear. Because there is a shot in the blog where it definitely appears that Caspian is fighting Peter, and there's a lot of discussion, which doesn't happen in the book, of course, and there's a lot of discussion about what it could be. And I think the most popular theory at this point is that he's fighting to decide who is going to fight Mira. So that's the most popular theory right now.
And I actually have to kind of, I can't print a retraction because this is a podcast, but I will tell you all, in the last episode, Glumpuddle, you brought up the issue of a piece of storyboard of Caspian kicking someone that looked like Peter, and I said, "Oh no, that will never happen." And going frame by frame through the production vlog, I noticed at the very end of that shot, you can see Caspian raising his leg up and kicking Peter.
Yeah, I
and so
that too.
It appears that I was wrong there. But Jens, what was your thoughts on that?
My first reaction is I'm completely bamboozled by that. I mean, we'd kind of heard that it was coming. We'd suspected it.
Yeah.
But to see it in the blog with the guys actually doing it, I cannot work out where it comes from.
Well, yeah, for me, Glumpuddle, if I had a signature banner, it wouldn't say, "Why is he fighting Peter?" It'd be, "How is he fighting Peter?"
That's a good one,
how
too.
Did this... How did this come around?
Yeah.
Which is the big question. And there's also a theory next to him fighting for deciding over Miraz. There's a theory that this is where they first meet and they don't know who each other are. But I don't know how much validity that has.
That's an interesting theory.
Yeah, I suppose it could.
I can't think of where they would work that in. I really love how they first meet in the book, where it's
exactly.
Sorcery and Sudden Vengeance, and they even someone actually says, "The help will come, and may even still be at the door," and they are at the door,
yeah.
And coming in at the nick of time, and so I hope that's
And that would be a huge change to the story. We haven't heard anything quite along those lines, so until further notice, I think it's safe to assume that they're still going to meet that way. But maybe not, I don't know.
Right.
But, looking at this, I'm again, we talked about this a little bit in the last podcast, and it is very important that Caspian be very much in awe of Peter, and definitely look up to him as his superior, as a leader, mm-hmm. as a king, as a captain. And I'm afraid, I don't really know how you could play this and not lose that. That's what concerns me.
The most popular theory about, they're just trying to decide who fights Miraz, that's one thing I can see being kind of acceptable, where or they're not actually trying to like hurt each other or anything, they're like really are both trying to see which one of us is better. And as long as it's essentially kind of a friendly duel like that, I think I'd be okay with it. It just doesn't really look like a very friendly duel when you look at it in the vlog.
Yeah.
No. Because that was another thing that I thought might be Peter sort of showing Caspian some of his moves sort of thing. But like you say, Mumfuddle, in the blog, it looks like they're really just going for each other. There's no sort of laid back.
Friendly kick. Boom.
Yeah, exactly. All seems a bit intense.
Yeah, that might be a cool thing too, actually, like you said, Vince, about if Peter gets there and maybe he just sort of says, well, you know, let me see what you got. Maybe even give you a few pointers or whatever. I think that would add to the whole idea that I love in Prince Caspian of the past, the ancient past coming back to help the present. And I mean, how cool would it be if you were Caspian and this figure out of your bedtime stories comes and decides to give you a few, tips on sword fighting? Like, that would be awesome. So I think that would actually kind of be in the spirit of the book if they did it that way.
And that would be great, Glumfuddle, but again, we have the whole issue of what you told us about in the last episode, where Adamson told you that they have a very serious argument.
Right, and that's the main reason. Yeah,
yeah,
main
it
reason
may be that this
isn't
that serious argument, but I can't see it. I think it is probably that serious argument he was alluding to.
I don't know, I'm still holding out that there's two separate things.
But...
Whoa, two people. Gents and then Glumfuddle.
Okay.
Right, well, I was just saying, I'm holding out that the two things are separate events. That they have an argument, and this fighting is not necessarily the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, I've never heard someone describe a sword fight as an argument, although it could be that Adamson didn't want to give that away, and so just called it an argument instead of a fight. But, those could be two separate events. It's just that this whole thing seems to go along with what we heard in the screenwriters in a previous production blog, where they talked about some of the antagonism between all the kings and queens. And
did they use the word antagonism?
I believe they did. They used the word antagonism. Mm. And that seems like it's going to be kind of a big part of the Prince Caspian movies, is this kind of rivalry or uneasiness in their relationship between all the kings and queens. And that's the reason that's the main reason why I can see this being kind of an unfriendly duel, is that they've talked about that before, about this relationship being really difficult. And so I'm eager to see what they do with it. A little afraid to see what they do with it as well.
Yeah, it's hilarious because Lewis sorted all that out with one sentence from Peter in the book. He just says to Caspian, I'm not here to steal your throne, I'm here to put you on it, or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
And there you go, all the trouble sorted, but these scriptwriters must feel like they have a job to do. Have to come up with some kind of conflict just to make the story a bit more interesting.
Yeah.
I'm not afraid of changes, actually. I mean, if you read Prince Caspian, you can see that this, if you're going to make it into a good movie, this will have to go through the most changes just to convert it to film. But again, I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, like when they say, okay, we're restructuring the story, I'm saying, okay, there's a lot of course you're going to have to do something because, playing a third of the movie in retrospect, like the book is done, is just not going to work. So you're faced with the question of, okay, do we start off with Peter, Susan, Edmund, Lucy, like the book does, and then have some of it in retrospect, and catch up with Caspian really quick? Or, do we start off with Caspian, the way it would be going chronologically, and then completely change where the issue where the audience is going, well, wait, where are Peter, Susan, Edmund, and Lucy?
Mm-hmm.
So I knew there were going to be changes coming, but I didn't think, and I still don't see how this could improve upon it, or even make it, to be frankly honest, that much more interesting.
Yeah, I'm not afraid of changes in Prince Caspian in particular. I acknowledge the fact that Prince Caspian is probably the most, definitely one of the most uncinematic books in the series. And I'm not afraid of changes, it's just that when changes seem so contrary to the ideas in the book, that's when, like I said before, if this sword fight is just Peter's meeting Caspian and saying, well, let me just see what you've got and maybe give you a few tips, that would be, I think it'd be very much in the spirit of the book. I think I might actually like that. But if it's not, if they really are just fighting each other because they're angry about something, then that seems so contrary to everything that's in the book, to everything that C.S. Lewis was about when he wrote this book, that I would have an issue with that.
Yeah. I'm even wondering, can it even work for the movie, because I could definitely see some audience members, I mean, if this really goes the way we think it's going to be going, then I could see some audience members saying, well, that was kind of stupid, you know, he blows this horn, gets all these kings and queens back, and then he just fights the guy once he gets there. You know? What kind of a jerk is this kid? So that's something I'm thinking. I'm wondering if that's going to be a problem for even for the film itself.
Yeah, I mean, I can't see just a couple of people in the forum have said, you know, well, if you had some kings and queens, there probably would kind of be a little rivalry in the relationship. But I just can't see if someone from the ancient past, you know, came back, like, one kind of not very good example I come up with is, like, if Moses came back and, like, to talk to me and he wanted to get me, like, advice about something, you know, I suppose there might be a few things I would disagree on, but in the end, I'd be
put
like...
Put him up, Moses.
Or whoever, I mean, it's something that we can all relate to, you know? Just a figure that everyone's heard of from the ancient past. And if he came back and he wanted to help me with something, you know, maybe there'd be things I would disagree with him on, but I can't, in the end, I'd be like, oh, yes, sir, Mr. Moses. You know, I'd be, like, totally in awe that I can't imagine actually fighting with him about something, you know? I'd be so respectful of everything and so in awe of the fact that, oh, my gosh, it's Moses. And that's kind of how I imagine Caspian looking at Peter as this figure out of that he's heard about his whole life in stories.
Gents, we've kind of put you on the side. I feel bad about that. What are your thoughts?
It seems to be turning into a bit of a runaway train. So, you know, they change one thing, so then they have to change another, and then another, and then another, so that the movie fits together. But at the end of it, it seems quite different from the book. Because did we not hear earlier on that they're going to change Caspian to make him more arrogant? Or something like that. And therefore, him fighting and having his back up against these other kings and queens would fit with Caspian being arrogant in the film, but it wouldn't fit with the Caspian if you just picked him straight out of the book.
I think that's a very good point about how you make one change and then that forces you to make another and then another. And there's a couple examples of that, I think. And like with the timeline, you know, that we've been talking about, if you just change one thing, that kind of forces you to mess around with everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think we've already had to kind of concede that this is not going to be quite the Caspian from the book, if for no other reason that Ben Barnes
I'm not completely opposed to the idea of Caspian having kind of an arrogance about him, simply because at the end of the book, you know, Aslan asks him, you know, do you feel yourself sufficient to take up the kingship of Narnia? And Caspian says no, and then, you know, Aslan says, well, then that means that, you know, you are really fit, because of how humble he is. And so I think it's kind of consistent with the book to come up with a story to where he becomes humble. So it's a change that I think is, depending on how they do it, but I think just that idea alone doesn't necessarily bother me, because I think it is a change that's kind of rooted in the book, but I might change my mind after I see that in the finished film.
Yeah.
Well, and you just put an idea in my head. If the duel, fight, whatever you want to call it, between Peter and Caspian serves in making Caspian more humble, if it's, you know, along those lines that you said, then it could possibly serve a purpose. But that's the only thing that's coming to my
head.
That's
a good point.
Yeah, and there's so much we don't know. It's important to keep in mind. We just always see it as a shot of Caspian and Peter fighting. We know a couple things about, oh, Caspian's kind of arrogant, and there's supposedly an argument between them. It'll be interesting to see how all these bits piece together in the final film, because there's probably a lot we still don't know.
Probably. We definitely know there's a lot we don't know.
Yeah, that's true, absolutely. We've seen so very little.
Yeah, at least a lot that Jensen and I don't know. We didn't visit Prague.
Yeah, even though some of us live a lot closer than others.
Yeah. Well, are we done then talking about Peter and Caspian?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. Well, there was another issue that's been discussed a little bit, and there's not a lot that really seen the blog about it, but Jim Fan has actually taken this one for her signature banner, and it's just the one frame or one shot we see of Caspian and Susan, and of course people are going, you know, jumping up and down in their seats about it, and frankly, I don't think it's a big deal. To be perfectly honest.
I think that there's definitely something going on in that shot. I don't see how else you can look at it. I mean, he's not admiring butterflies in the background. There's obviously some kind of, maybe not romance, but some kind of awkwardness in there where she kind of helps him with his crossbow or whatever that is that he's holding. And I still don't think there's going to be an actual Caspian Susan romance like it was rumored. But, or he wasn't even necessarily rumor, just that he had to be fancied by Susan. But I still am kind of uncomfortable with this shot. And hey, who knows? Maybe this is the reason that Caspian and Peter are fighting.
Oh, no, please.
Oh, please don't go there. No.
Stay away from my sister.
Well, I have to say,
no.
From what I saw on the blog, from the way I interpreted it, he just looks a bit awkward because here's this girl that he's only just met showing him how to use, is it a crossbow? So, I think it's reasonable to think he's just being a teenager who's not all that comfortable with this girl showing him what to do. And he's probably not had that much contact with girls up to now, maybe. Well, I don't know. He's maybe just uncomfortable around Susan. But I'm not really that concerned about it meaning anything more than that.
Well, I mean,
I think, like...
Can I just say something?
If I may say, Glenfuddle... Let me just say, I think, like you said, you know, there is something going on, but I don't think it's anything really huge that I think we have to be really concerned about. I mean, I think it's something that they're adding in, and I actually tease sometimes that my idea for April Fool's last year gave Andrew the idea, but I would really like to know, I'd like to ask Andrew, I said, did you even see what I wrote, or did you have the idea long before then? But I don't think it's going to be something that's really going to, you know, like you said, it's not going to be a full-fledged romance, which is what I wrote, that there was going to be a romance between them. But, you know, as my little joke. But I don't think it's going to be something really huge. Like Jint said, I think it's just supposed to be, you know, this girl that he's met who's also this queen that, if you think about it, and probably would make me awkward, is realizing, whoa, she's already grown up to be, you know, in her 30s or so as a grown woman, and now she's a child again. So it's like she's, you know, it's like she's older than him,
mm-hmm.
It really, as far as her Narnian self is concerned.
I'm gonna say one of the reasons I would have a problem with this, it's not necessarily, I mean, maybe, like, you could say that, oh, he probably would be like that with another girl, but this is not just another girl. This is Queen Susan the Gentle from the ancient past, a figure out of myth and legend. And I can't, if like Delilah from the Bible came back, I can't imagine feeling like that. This is someone I've been hearing about for a long time and sort of, these Bible stories, and I can't imagine, it's not just another girl. This is a figure from myth and legends. And so I think it's just one of the same reasons I have a problem with Caspian fighting Peter, is that it kind of takes away from their awe and respect and reverence of this king or queen.
Well, I think that if it was, you know, this person from myth and legend, then he would be feel awkward around her. And why did you choose Delilah? No one likes Delilah.
Well, whatever. It's like an attractive female from the Bible, you know, supposedly. So, you know what I mean.
Say Queen Esther.
Okay, we'll say Esther. How about that?
Okay, thank you.
Okay,
thank
I think you. I would have this very awe and respect of Queen Esther if she were to come back.
Or even Eve. Eve is in the Chronicles of
Narnia. Right, there you go. I just picked the first person off the top of my head.
Delilah was the first person in your head.
Yeah, that probably says quite a lot about you, Glenfuddle.
Awkward moment. I'll find some cool theme song music to fill it. Yeah.
If you guys were figures from the ancient past, I don't think we'd be having this discussion.
No, I would just delete you from the conference call and decide, nah, I'm not even going to bother myself with this marshmallow. Well, I think this is a sign we've also exhausted that topic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's see, is there anything that I'm forgetting?
Oh, we could talk about that video on YouTube.
Oh, yes. Let's at least talk about that. Let's talk about that.
Okay.
We'll save Comic-Con for later. I have some things I've planned coming up for that. But, yeah, Tyrus, I believe, was the name.
Yep.
Let's at least talk about that.
Yep.
What did you all think? I loved it.
I was very impressed, yeah, certainly.
I thought, finally, no more confusion with Chewbacca. Because that was the thread that came up. Exactly. Remember, someone said, hey, I saw Chewbacca in the Chronicles of Narnia. I said, what?
Yeah, there's definitely an improvement over the City Tears in the first film. I think everybody will agree on that one. And I'm just really pleased that I like the fact that they try to do things, you know, for real as much as possible. I think most people probably would just want to do the Say Tears as completely CG. But I like the fact that they're kind of pulling out old-fashioned tricks like mechanical heads here and there. And it's great that we're now able to take real images, like a mechanical head or, you know, everything, the whole upper body, and blend it with CG legs. I think that's a really, it gives us so many more possibilities of filmmaking.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was just watching one of the production documentaries on the extended edition the other day, and they were saying that most of the satyrs were actually retrofitted for Lionel in the wardrobe. They didn't have anything specially made for the guys that were playing the satyrs in that film. So it's great to see that they've been able and been allowed to put more design time and effort into
them even,
for Prince Gaffigan.
Mark, I'm sorry, not Mark Johnson. Howard Berger said in his interview that we have on NarniaWeb, that he did with, I think, Coming Soon. He said that they made the decision to do them as live action. They were going to do them as CG, and then at the very last minute, I think he said around 3 weeks before filming started, they decided they were going to actually do them as a costume and live action. And he said he just had a little bit of time to come up with it, and he's never really been happy. So I'm glad that he has been able to put that much time into it, and it's great that they've been able to make it as advanced as they could, because I'm looking at the video on YouTube, and that thing looks alive, and it looks like it has a genuine sense of humor, probably because it had Richard Taylor behind the eyes. But I was really happy that they're doing that, and also, this goes into the Howard Berger interview, he said he wants more variation between the creatures, and I love that, because, frankly, this is something even the BBC version of Narnia had over the last film, is that there was some variation in the age of the dwarves and the colors of the fawns' fur and things like that. And one thing I didn't like about the last one is that every single satyr looked, well, almost the same. Like the same satyr, maybe just a little bit of variation, and every single fawn looked pretty much the same.
Yeah, I agree. I think we're seeing a lot of improvements with the overall design and look of Prince Caspian.
Sometimes I just like to be quiet and just wait. I wonder how long this silence will last.
One more thing I wanted to... One other thing it'll be interesting to see is if Tyrus actually has any lines in the movie. I think he probably will.
I think so.
But it'll be cool. Yeah, it'll be cool to see. It'll be cool to see if they can do that with the mechanical head, or if they have to do like the CG mouth, like they did with Hopman in the first
one. Actually, that wasn't CG mouth.
No, well, they tried to do it. They did it like he did the actual line on set, but they did kind of have to touch it up with CG.
Really? I thought I saw in the maybe I don't know if it was a commentary or one of the behind the scenes. They said that they found out they had lines for him, and they said, do you think you can do it, or will we have to do CGs? And the guy said, I don't know if we can. Let's figure it out. And I thought that they actually came up with something, and that was actually the movement of the lips.
Yes, they did. They did make the mouth move. It's just they had to touch it up a little bit with CG to make the lip sync perfect.
Oh, okay.
But, there was definitely a CG assist in that.
All right. Well, then, fine. Put my ideas in the trash. My little ideas of, I thought this was how it was. Once again, humiliated before thousands of Narniwebbers.
I just, Ottman was, they didn't build the head with, he didn't have it, they just came up with that line on set. So then when they were building the head, they didn't really build the capability to do lines. They just kind of had it. But I think this time around, they are going to, kind of go in with that in mind. There might be some lines, and so I think they just might be able to do some lines without any kind of CG assist in this one.
I remember when George Lucas was filming Episode 3, and they had all the different Wookiees on set, and he was talking about building all the Wookiee costumes. He said, actually, there's not that much of an improvement over those kinds of things that you know, they said, you know, computer technology has improved vastly over 30 years. They said the costumes have not, except in the area of remote control, movement for the lips and things. So they said we can do stuff now with eyes and eyebrows and lips that we couldn't do before. And I think that this will... Tyrus will probably have some dialogue. I don't know how much.
Is there the anything in the interviews you wanted to talk about?
Not.
You talked about the Howard Berger one a little bit. Is there?
Just a couple things. Yeah, the E.C. Macedon one. But I was impressed that she said, you know, they built over 330 pieces of complete suits of armor for the extras. That's a lot.
It's definitely bigger than Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Yeah. Well, I could be wrong, and I often am, but I would probably... I don't think I'm too far off on saying it's probably bigger than The Lord of the Rings, too. I mean, as far as for any single army that they had, I know that they had about 250 for the Rohirrim, but that's pretty huge, if you think about it.
Yeah. Well, it was 250 Rohan costumes, they said, yeah.
Was it just me, or did pretty much, I think all of the interviews said that the film is going to be darker?
Yeah, I definitely, everything we've been hearing about it, it's a darker, and Johnson actually called it a more adult film. And so, yeah, which I think, they could take that a little too far, but overall, I think that's probably a good thing.
Yeah, well, look at the two main lead actors are in their 20s. William Moseley is 20 now, and Ben Barnes is, what, 25, 26?
Yeah, he doesn't look like he's 25 to me.
Not quite, no. Well, the last thing I want to discuss is something that was announced that has... We actually have a poll on NarniWeb you can go to. But they've announced that they're going to try to release a film every single year. I think every May, starting with Prince Caspian and Voyage of the Dawn Treader. And Jensen Glumpuddle, what are your thoughts on that? Do you think that's good or bad? What do you think?
Shall I go first?
Yeah.
Why not?
Well, I am a bit concerned about that, I have to say. I'm a bit worried it might be too quickly. But then again, when they start doing the films that don't use all the same characters, then I guess they could be working on one while finishing off the other without too much hassle.
You know, the interesting thing about this is if you look at the poll on the front page of NarniWeb, at the moment they're asking if you pick they're making them too fast. And the options are, the quality is going to drop, or no, the faster the better. And at the moment, 73% have said that the faster the better. And
so they'd rather have them quickly.
Yeah, exactly. And my theory on that one is that they would like to see them quickly, but a lot of those people might still think that the quality is going to drop a little bit. And I'm with the crowd in the first category, where I think that there is a danger of the quality dropping. And it's more about the fact that they can't really give each film loving attention. That the studio is now juggling multiple Narnia films at once. There's almost certainly going to be a new director, a new crew for each film. That may or may not be a problem with Narnia. But I think that one of the main problems with the Harry Potter films and the reason is that they pop them out so fast and they don't have time, and they're becoming very complicated books, Harry Potter, and they don't really have time to work out how can we fit in all these elements of the book, how can we adapt this, and they don't really have time to come up with a long-term plan for the series. And so I am a little, I'm definitely concerned about the series, the quality of the series dropping. The only positive thing about it is that I can see is that the actors will be closer to the correct ages. But I'd rather see better quality films.
Well, frankly, keep in mind also, the Harry Potter films are not being released every year.
Right, it's every year and a half, actually.
Yeah, or even 2 years.
And that
I think the next one's...
Right, to me.
Yeah, so, and I am with you, Glumpuddle. I think it will really hurt the quality. And frankly, I have a hard time believing that they're actually going to be able to pull it off. Because if you remember, I think the original release date was December 2008 for Prince Caspian. And that got pushed back about another 6 months or so. It might have even been summer 2008. but I'm sorry, 2007. It got pushed back another 6 months to, so it's going to be a May 2008 release. But I don't think they're going to be able to pull it off, and I think that they're going to quickly find out it's not going to work too well. Now, and like you said, the only possible plus is that the actors' ages are going to be closer together, but that's not going to be a much of a problem past Voyage of the Dawn Treader.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Because you have 1, 2, 3, Wardrobe, Caspian, and Treader, where it takes place pretty close together. But, you know, Silverchair, Last Battle, those are the only other ones with Eustace in them where age would even matter. And they're not supposed to be, you know, bam, bam, bam. It won't even be much of a problem if he's, say, a couple years older in each one. So I don't see why it would even be that much of a plus to have him coming out every year. You know, the quicker the better.
Well, I know the actors' ages, they are going to be closer now, they shoot faster, but I personally don't see why. I don't think it's worth it. And that is, are the actors' ages really that important to the story? Or even the characters' ages, is it really that important to the story? If you can get the correct ages, obviously that's great. But, you know, this is filmmaking, and it's just one of those things I think you have to put up with. And I'd much rather see them take the time and work on the things that really do matter in the stories.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that it's not going to be – I'm sorry, just a sec, Jens. It's not going to be so much of a problem right now because they're doing Prince Caspian and Voyage of the Dawn Treader. I think that's going to work to their benefit.
Yeah, maybe.
Doing them quickly right now. Well, yeah, maybe. You know, but I think they can do it. But if they were to keep this up at one a year, I really don't think it's going to work. And I'd be very, very surprised if 6 years later I'm doing a podcast on, pulled it off to do one every year, but they've actually done it well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In short, I just can't see how the quality will improve by making them faster. I think that's kind of my end-all statement.
Yep, and I'll just ditto that.
Yeah. Well, I think that's pretty much all we have. Well, so overall, Jens, any last thoughts?
I just like to say it has been a very exciting week this week with all the new stuff that we've got out, and I'm just hoping that they're going to keep it coming. Being a GMD mod, it does make my life that bit harder, but it's all worth it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's been great, and it's been really good to talk to you guys about it as well.
Oh, yeah, we're glad you're here. Glumpuddle, thoughts on the movie? You said 50-50 earlier.
I can't remember a time during Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, but we had this much exciting news so fast. And I'm actually kind of hoping that we'll get a bit of a break so I can just calm down and take all of this in and analyze it and try to piece everything together. But it's really overwhelming at the moment. It's just such an incredible time to be in Narnia Weber.
Oh, yeah. Well, I am a little bit hesitant towards, you know, some of the stuff that's coming in. And there's a little bit of trepidation there, but I think I am just really excited to see the film. I think it might just be better than the first film. Not sure, but I think it has the potential, which I am really excited about. So, I'm wondering, do either of you know when the movie, it's the Walden film, Water Horse, do you know when it comes out? Because I'm thinking that might be a time for a trailer or a teaser.
Is that not due out some December time?
I think you asked about the trailer.
Yeah, I'm thinking maybe the next chance we have for a teaser, an official teaser, will probably be the Water Horse in December or so, because that's a Walden film.
Yeah, it's a Walden film. Yeah, it's
possible. Walden not doing The Dark is Rising? Is that not a Walden film?
I don't know.
Because that's out fairly soon.
I don't know. Maybe it'll come out with that.
Yeah, it's possible. Yeah, I was thinking more about the Golden Compass. It might be a great film to release it with. And Disney has kind of, from what I've seen, a reputation for releasing trailers a little later than expected. And so I would expect something with the Christmas films.
Yeah.
I sat through the whole Star Wars movie, the last one, just to see the Narnia trailer, and it didn't even show.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
I led the applause when we saw the Narnia trailer.
Yeah.
It had already been online for about 2 weeks at that point.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? We were telling everybody to phone the cinema before they went to make sure that the Narnia trailer was going to be showing. Oh, good times.
Yeah. Well, all those good times are coming again. Glumpuddle and gents, thank you so much for joining me.
You're very welcome. Brilliant. Thank you.
Take care.
Can't wait to see what comes out in the next couple of weeks.
Oh, yeah. Unlike you, I'm not hoping for less news. That wraps up all the news we'll be covering today. We do plan to cover Comic-Con later on, so be sure to check back again soon for that. If you would like to email us with our thoughts, then you can email Glumpuddle with his email glumpuddle@narniaweb.com. Or if you want to email me about the podcast, or if you have any questions you'd like addressed on the show, then email rillian@narniaweb.com. And as for Jintz, well, she's a little bit more reclusive, so you're going to have to go to the forums and send her a private message. Again, check up on the website for all the latest news and for discussions on the forums. Jintz, Glumpuddle, and I are going to be on there, and we will discuss a lot of the stuff we've been talking about here in the podcast, so feel free to join in and have fun with the discussion there. That concludes this episode of the Narnia Web Council, and until next time, I'm your host, Rillian. Thank you for joining us.